Now live from Everbank Field, 1010 XL 92.5 FM presents Jaguars Today with your hosts Mike Dempsey and Tony Smith.
All right, welcome everybody. Happy Friday to you. It's brought to you by Claude Nolan Cadillac. Jaguars Today kicking off. Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony here with you. Tony, I will say, I'll say with a degree of confidence that after last night's game, being a guy who takes pleasure in the misery of others, as you've known me to be, the Jags are not the worst team in their own state right now, thank goodness.
Not right now. Look, watching that game last night, Mike, honestly, as someone who's been covering a team for the last couple of years where we've seen our share of blowouts, you know, we've watched a team that you get halfway through the first quarter and you're like, oh no. We've had those moments here in Jacksonville. I don't think I've ever seen one that was worse than last night.
It
I mean,
was
that was
unbelievable.
An avalanche on top of Tampa Bay. They couldn't stop anything that Atlanta wanted to do on the offensive or defensive side of the ball. I mean, it was as pathetic as I've seen a team look in the National Football League.
Well, maybe the play of the year to me so far was Devin Hester forcing the fumble after Mark Barron had, it was ruled a fumble. I forget, maybe a fullback for the Bucs caught a pass. The ball kind of popped out right to Mark Barron, starts running with it. They finally catch a break in the game, and Hester just comes up immediately right behind him, punches the ball out, recovers
it. Yes, he did.
What a game for Devin Hester last night. Absolutely unbelievable, but very similar this game, I thought, to last weekend with Washington and Jacksonville, Tony. No Roddy White in that game, right? I mean, you know, no DeSean Jackson. Now they had Matt Ryan. They didn't have their quarterback knocked out, but not full strength, at least on the offensive side of the football, and just did whatever they wanted to the Buccaneers last night. And what did it show you? You've got Vincent Jackson on one side. You've got certainly a much more highly touted rookie in Mike Evans than either of the Jaguars or any of the Jaguars rookie wide receivers. So you can argue you've got a pretty talented pair of potential pass catchers. I say potential. They couldn't get him the football last night. It was unbelievable. That offensive line was a sieve, and maybe it played a role into all of our thinking into maybe the Jags' pass rush is going to be a little bit better than it's going to turn out to be, because they certainly look dominant against the Bucs in the first quarter of play in the preseason this year. But, look, the pass rush for the most part hasn't been the problem here. Offense and getting pushed around last week on defense in the running game and just missed tackles and what have you. But I don't know. Maybe just looking at that game last night, I just felt just the tiniest bit better. It doesn't mean the Jags are more likely or less likely to win this weekend, but you watch guys running wide open against the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, and it doesn't help that it's happening here, but people say all the time, how come I don't see that from other NFL teams? You saw that in a big way last night, and that's a team that went out and spent a boatload of money the last few years on free agents. Now, they were without Gerald McCoy last night. They were without Doug Martin, but Doug Martin hasn't played good football basically since his rookie season.
No. So, and look, it's an offensive line that's obviously having problems, and I think if that game last night teaches you anything, it really doesn't matter what kind of weapons you have in your offense if you don't have the engine that makes those things work. And that's a combination of quarterback and offensive line. It's an offensive line that gives the quarterback enough time for that quarterback to make plays. And I think different quarterbacks need different amount of times to make that kind of thing happen. I mean, how long have we talked about Green Bay and Indianapolis and these places where, look, Green Bay hadn't had an offensive line since when with Aaron Rodgers? Have they ever had a good offensive line in front of that man? And he's still been able to accomplish what he's accomplished in his career in the National Football League. Andrew Luck hasn't had an offensive line in 2 years. There are differing degrees of what different quarterbacks need to be successful. Obviously, the quarterbacks in Tampa Bay need more than they're being given right now. And it doesn't matter if you have Vincent Jackson and Mike Evans and all the talent in the world at wide receiver. It's about protecting the quarterback long enough for that guy to make plays, and in Tampa right now, they can't.
Right. If they had Aaron Rodgers last night, they would have been better off. They wouldn't have won that football game. They could have switched quarterbacks last night. Matt Ryan could have played for the Bucs, and Josh McCown, who you got to wonder if we've seen the last of Josh McCown as a starter in Tampa, hit his hand on a helmet last night, didn't get a final prognosis, at least a sprained thumb. I don't know if he's had the x-rays or an MRI or what the full prognosis is, but Mike Glennon came in, and Lovie Smith even said after the game that probably his play was one of the few bright spots. Coming in cold, wasn't spectacular, but when you compare it to what McCown looked like out there last night, it was just horrendous. So, you know, if you are like me and sometimes you feel a little bit better about yourselves to see someone else stumble, all right, I'm human. I'm honest. It happens. I'm talking about in the sports realm, mostly, okay? But certainly last night was an occasion for you to get fired up. Holy smokes, listening to Bob Lamy this morning. And we used to have Bob Lamy on quite a bit back in the day, the voice of the Indianapolis Colts. Oh, he thinks Trent Richardson's a good player, Tony. Just absolutely confounding to me. Bob is squarely in that category of the play-by-play guy who's right there on the payroll for the home team. And he is more a member of the PR department, I think, than an actual objective observer of the proceedings and what's going on.
No, Trent Richardson is terrible. And anyone who pays much attention to what's going on in the National Football League knows that Trent Richardson, look, it was a bad trade for the Indianapolis Colts. They lost the first round pick this year to have what? I mean, they're better off when Ahmad Bradshaw is on the field right now than when Trent Richardson is. You could go find another guy that gives you kind of that power running style of Trent Richardson that can't make anybody miss and isn't going to break any tackles. There are guys like that everywhere in the National Football League. You don't have to spend a first round pick to get them.
Other than guys that are going to get rewarded by their own team in free agency, you know, because they've produced for that team and they're part of maybe a winning mix, tell me the next running back that's going to get anything on the free agent market. Look at how it's fared, right? I mean, you look at guys that Steven Jackson on display last night. He had a decent game last night, but he's been an injury-prone, over-the-hill runner for the most part, or underutilized or whatever, but he certainly wasn't worth what they paid him to come to Atlanta for $4 or $5 million a year, whatever it was last year. Ben Tate is hurt. Toby Gerhardt is unproductive. And you can go on and on and on, and you could pick up basically a scrap heap reject veteran like Ahmad Bradshaw, and he's out playing all these guys right now. Why would anybody invest any kind of money in that position unless you're a Philadelphia team that already has LeSean McCoy in place and he's the centerpiece of your offense and he's in the prime of his career? I can get rewarding your own guy to some degree.
Mm-hmm.
But man, I mean, if you're a running back about to hit free agency next year, it is going to be a sad sight. You're not going to get what you expect, nor should you, I don't think, in today's NFL climate.
And really, we've seen that kind of trend here for the last couple of years in the NFL. And it's going to continue. And there's a difference between saying teams aren't investing heavily in the running back position and saying that teams are ignoring the running back position. What they've figured out is that they don't have to invest, you know, that $6-8 million a year in that position to get value out of it. Now, when you don't have one, it hurts not to have a running back in this league. It's that you don't have to spend that kind of money, and you can spread that $6-8 million around to two or three guys in your backfield and have an effective backfield without having that workhorse type guy.
Oh, and not because of the current legal predicament that he finds himself in, but could Adrian Peterson have ever done enough to pay off the cap charges that the Vikings are facing for him over the next several years, like $12, $14 million a season for
Super
a running
Bowl.
Back?
That's about it.
Right. Rush for 2,000 yards and be the centerpiece of a Super Bowl championship team. Just obviously the trend's away from that right now in the National Football League. If you want to get in today, 641-1010. It is a Keys to Victory Friday. Tony, I'm going to keep banging on that door like Bum Phillips used to with the Houston Oilers. And hopefully one day I will kick it in, unlike the Oilers versus the Steelers in the postseason.
Mm-hmm.
Victory for the Jaguars. Could it be in the offing this week? I'll say this. The Colts, I think, will look vastly different than they looked on Monday Night Football. Because I think if you read what their offensive coordinator, Pep Hamilton, had to say this week, he said, look, I get the criticism. It comes with the territory. People thought he was too conservative. He said, look, we wanted the pace of that game to be played at our speed. And they're cognizant of what Philadelphia wanted to do to them on Monday Night Football. They want to run, you know, a lot of tempo, a lot of offense, what have you. Jags want to do the same thing, but I don't think they fear that from Jacksonville because they don't have the weapons to capitalize on it like Philadelphia had. So they came out pounding Trent Richardson, pounding Ahmad Bradshaw, a lot of dump downs to the running backs.
Yep.
I think Andrew Luck's going to sit back and he's going to drop back 5 to 7 steps. And I think he's going to look to sling the ball all over the field right from the opening jump.
Wouldn't be surprised if he was. I think that they feel like they probably can establish, or at least try to establish, the run game against the Jags, but Andrew Luck is clearly their best player, and the weapons that they have on the outside are really good in that offense right now for the Indianapolis Colts. So I wouldn't be surprised if they try to establish that pass game early to set up the run a little bit later, because if the Jags do have any perceived strength, you would think it would be against the run. Although, where is that right now? I mean, where is any strength for this Jaguar team right now? By the way, if that was their plan going into Monday night, it still didn't work because that defense was gassed. I mean, halfway through the third quarter, that Colts defense looked exhausted, and that's when the Eagles started taking advantage of them still. So, look, you can try to slow them down. Game plans are fine. It doesn't always mean they're going to work, even if you execute it the way that you want to.
See, but that's the thing. I think it did work until 5 minutes left to go in the game when Andrew Luck throws that interception. You can argue, was there a penalty on the play or not? There probably was, and it shouldn't have counted, but it did because they're up 7 with 5 minutes to go, and they're going to kick a field goal. They're in field goal range already. They're going to make it a two-score game. And I know Philly went on to score 10 more points in the game, but I think the tenor of that game changes completely if you're down 10 compared to down 7. Down 7, you're thinking, okay, this is it. One score, we're going to drive down. We're going to tie this football game up. Down 10 with under 5 to go when they would have got the ball back, I think would have been a little more
so
daunting.
So essentially, but their game plan to play conservative bit them when they got too aggressive on a third down.
I think, I don't know if it was too aggressive, but you can't get picked when you're already in field goal range with a 7-point lead with 5 minutes to go. So, I don't have a problem with the play call. If you're Andrew Luck, you cannot throw an interception in that circumstance. And look, the guy's a great young quarterback, but in that one, I think he made a mistake. I think they're going to come out and they're not going to have any fear of any mistakes. I don't think they feel like Jacksonville can hurt them. I think they're going to come in here and treat this game like they can do whatever they want and see if they can get some things sparked in their offense. Maybe get T.Y. Hilton going a little bit, who's been relatively quiet the first part of the season here. And we know how big the tight ends have been against the Jags this season. And Hayes Carline detailing just the last 16 games. So Tony goes way back. Beyond that, Hayes did a little write-up on that today in the Florida Times Union. You can check that out. The numbers were Pro Bowl-esque. If you were a single tight end, putting up those numbers, it was like 1,100 yards, 11 touchdowns on 90-plus receptions, I believe, over the last 16 games for opposing tight ends against the Jacksonville Jaguars. Claude Nolan Cadillac brings you the show every Friday. Lauren Brooks is along. I'm here with Fat Tony. We'll hear from Gus Bradley and Toby Gerhart. Coming up, we'll also take you to Indianapolis today. Derek Schultz, WNDE, in Indy, about 25 minutes away, and we'll get the Colts' perspective on this game. Am I right? Do they think they're going to just come in here and do whatever they please, or is Derek going to poor mouth it like Bob Lamy did earlier today? I think the Colts think they're a lot better than the 0-2 record indicates. We'll get into all that and take your keys to victory as well. The Tom Bush family of dealerships asks you, in the fan feedback spotlight, share your three keys for the Jags to pick up their first win of the season. You can post on the Jaguars Today Facebook page or tweet us at MD_1010XL, at 1010XL Fat Tony, at 1010XL Lauren. It's Claude Nolan Cadillac Friday, just getting rolling. 641-1010, the number. We'll hear from Gus Bradley and Toby Gerhart next on Jaguars Today on 1010XL 92.5 FM. All right, Tony. Know it, love it, Eddie Money. Baby, hold on to me. What do we got here? Hold on for dear life, because here comes Blake Bortles in the second half. Spend your money on some Jaguar tickets and protect the bank this week.
Keep going. This is fun.
I'm trying to think of an Eddie Murphy routine that would be synonymous with the state of the Jaguar franchise. And all I keep thinking of is, your wife is a Bigfoot. But I don't think that's applicable here.
Not exactly.
Hold baby, big baby Marcus Stroud will be coming in.
Going back
surprise
in time.
Addition to the D-line this week. I've exhausted my guesses. You got anything? Any help over there?
Not at the moment, no.
No? All right.
I'll wait for another clue.
Lauren, within the ballpark, within the solar system, on any of that nonsense I just spit out?
No, it was all nonsense.
I didn't think so.
But you know what? Friday, it's Friday, so yeah, you're allowed to have nonsense. Happy Friday. We made
happy
it.
Happy Friday. You know what
it's
I'm excited about?
It's been a long
about?
Week. What are you excited about?
I'm excited about a number of things.
Okay. Tailgating?
No. You're getting these all out of sequence. First, I'm excited to be here with all of you. I'm excited about the Mike Davidson Ford Friday Night Lights High School Scoreboard Show.
Mm-hmm. After some high school football.
Fat Tony and the Hacker after some high school football. Tonight, BK, tonight, what do you got?
We are at Wolfson, so you know that it's basically
crush
me versus Hacker all day today.
Right. And I always
just
say,
let us score. That's what I've asked every coach that has come on every week that's playing Wolfson the next week. I was like, look, you're going to crush them. We just want to, we want
to, like
one kid.
We're like the Bucks.
We want one kid to experience what it's like to score on that high school gridiron.
Was it, 56-0 before the Bucks got on the board last night, right?
Yes.
56-0.
56-0, and then a non-call on a pretty clear offensive pass
interference. Oh, was that the most blatant push-off you've ever seen in your life? I'm like, what? Are you kidding? Michael Jordan thinks that was a bad push-off.
Right.
Are you kidding me? So I'm excited about those things. I'm excited about seeing Lauren Brooks here.
Yay.
During the pregame on Sunday as
I
we get you ready for Jaguar football.
Yeah, and we're going to have some fun public stuff to give away to the tailgater of the game. So,
oh, do tell. You got any Boar's Head roast beef subs on white with a little provolone cheese and white mayo and spicy mustard?
Unfortunately, I do not have any. Yeah, I do not
you don't have
any,
that?
Orders in as of now, but I'm sure I can do that before Sunday.
Some Parmesan cheese and then maybe just lettuce on top of that, and then you'd
okay.
be all set. There you go.
Yeah, I'll go back and listen to the recording of this and then bring you that Sunday.
They call that the Dempsey, is what that's
do
called.
They?
Yeah, well, at the Wildwood St. Augustine Publix, they
oh,
do. I don't know if they really call it that, but then when they see me coming, they know what I'm getting.
So yeah, I'll have some stuff to give away, and then of course 1010 stuff to give away for some
yes.
tailgating people, and then I'll be at one point in time in the stadium for the first time talking to some people. So I'm excited. It's going to be a great
home
opener.
Grab a handful of Jaguars Today T-shirts and give them out to the peeps.
I most certainly will.
There you go. Lauren Brooks is the gift giver. She's the bringer of light. Okay,
and so generous I am.
We need hope, right? We've got a 14 game season here, and we got to find a way to go 10-4.
Yep.
By the way, did you guys listen to Jaguars Thursday last night?
Of course.
Of course, right. So the little boy named Carlos, who was 10 years old, calls in and says, would you guys rather have $100 or the Jags to go 16-0? Which is adorable because the Jags can't go 16-0.
Yes, but,
but
right.
it was so cute.
14-2, and clearly the answer is $100.
Baselli and Lagerman both said 16-0, of course. And then they asked Carlos, and Carlos said, yeah, I'll take the $100.
I would say, hey, Carlos, you're a smart kid, okay?
Then Lagerman told him to look up compounding interest on Google to see what his $100 would get him in like 30 years.
Well, you know,
so he's going to be a well-educated little boy.
He could take a single dollar and go to Vegas and put it down on the Jags and compound it week by week and keep rolling it over on the Jags going 16-0. You'd probably do better than 100
bucks. You're trying to teach Carlos gambling now.
It's legal in Vegas, okay? What's wrong with you? This
what
is
do you
God
think
bless
the stock
America.
Market is?
All right, exactly. All right, exactly.
That's
by
true.
The way, New Jersey's like, we don't care what the federal law says. Gamble on sports. We do not care. God bless you, New Jersey. You scofflaws, you. All right. The number, 641-1010. We'll hear from Gus here momentarily if you'd like to get on board. Like Harvey, who has called Jaguars Today this morning on a Claude Nolan Cadillac Friday. Good morning, Harvey.
Yeah, good morning, guys and girls. Hey, real quick. You know, over the years, no matter how bad the Jags have been, whether it's the expansion years or Del Rio years, we've always had a home run threat. We had Jimmy, we had Fred, we had MJD, and, you know, that's given the fans some sort of hope to be able to, you know, go out to a sports bar and actually talk a little trash every now and then. And I think the frustrating thing now is we don't even have that. And, you know, how does Philly get a guy like Darren Sproles with a guy like McCoy already on the team? We've got all this money. And we don't use anything. So I'll take that off the air. Thanks.
All right. Thank you, man. Well, in the case specifically of Darren Sproles, they came away for nothing, Tony. What is New Orleans doing? I mean, New Orleans is a team. I think you picked them to go to the Super Bowl, right?
I did.
You got Super Bowl aspirations. You got a playmaker that dangerous. You give him up for a sixth-round pick. Honestly, I do think, and I get this whole you got to build through the draft. Sometimes I think some of these late-round picks are way overvalued by teams. I mean, just way overvalued. If you truly look, and the Jags are an exception, because the state of the roster when Dave Caldwell took the job was so poor that you could expect any live body to come in here and make this football team, okay? But look around the NFL. Third-round picks get cut. Fifth-round picks get cut. Sixth and seventh-round picks. It's a joke, and you can go out there and pick up a guy like that and look, I just said don't spend big money in free agency on running backs. Darren Sproles is clearly a weapon that fits exactly what they want to do in Philadelphia, which is spread you out, get a bunch of guys that can get momentum going one way, get you out of your pursuit lanes, and cut back against the grain. And he's great at that. He's still got life in his legs. And they're like, hey, it's a late pick. The contract's not big. I mean, I do think teams are way too conservative sometimes about how they hoard 6th and 7th round picks.
No, and the good teams especially. There's no reason for a team like New Orleans. I mean, what's a 6th round pick going to give you if you're New Orleans? You're already a team that's in position right now to succeed. And it's the same way in Philadelphia, which is why they're willing to make those kinds of trades. But look, if you look at the Jags, and the caller brought up the point of at least they've always had that guy that can be the big play threat. And for this team right now, they have those guys. They're just all rookies.
They're like eggs that haven't even hatched
right.
yet.
Right. I mean, Marquise Lee is potentially that type of guy.
I think Allen Robinson is
Allen Robinson
guy.
Certainly is that type of guy. I think Denard Robinson is that type of guy. He just doesn't have the skill set yet to get him on the field all that much. And hopefully they can find some kind of role for him going forward where he can give them some kind of big play ability. The Jaguars have those guys, and I think they have more of that than they've had for the last 2 years. The thing is, it's young, and it's developing, and we don't know what that picture is going to look like. Look, we talked about this in the offseason. As much excitement as there was for this Jaguar football team and the idea that this defense looked like it was shaping into something, especially the defensive line, we talked about the questions on the offense, that there was going to be 5 guys on that offensive line that weren't here playing last year, basically. And Pastore was the one exception, but he got hurt. There's going to be 5 new guys on that offensive line to start the season. They got a bunch of rookies that they're counting on at the receiver position. They're so thin at tight end, and they're starting Chad Henne at quarterback with Toby Gerhardt, who's never been a feature back in this league. All of these question marks on the offense, every answer to those questions through 2 games has been, uh-oh. I mean, that's where the team is right now. Hopefully they develop something here over the first part of the season that turns into something not only later this year, but going into the future. But right now, yeah, there's not a whole lot of hope on the offensive side of the ball.
No, it's almost worst-case scenario across the board at every position. I actually think Chad Henne hasn't played as bad as the fear of how bad he could play is. You know, we've seen that he's at least not turned it over at a high rate. I'm saying he hasn't been great, but when you compare it, the offensive line has been the eyesore. Receivers running the wrong routes, drop passes, what have you. Allen Hurns for a half of football, outstanding for the first half. Since
sure.
then, nothing, really.
Which is why the defense has been so disappointing, because we kind of knew the offense wasn't going to be very good early in the season. I don't think you really could expect them to be as bad as they've been for the last 6 quarters, but we knew that the offense wasn't going to be very good, but the defense was supposed to be able to carry this team to being competitive throughout much of the season, and they just haven't. I mean, for that second half against Philadelphia and that entire game against Washington, the defense gave them nothing. And because of that, and the offense is inept with everything that everyone's trying to learn at the same time, it looks like it looked against Washington. You got to hope that the defense grows a spine this week against Indianapolis coming into town.
All right, let's go back to the lines and welcome Theo to Jaguars today. Good morning, Theo.
Hey, how you doing?
Good.
Hey, I've been a Jaguars fan since 95, that's the inaugural season. And watching this season, I understand they want to go young on offense and defense. But it seems to me with the play calling, they don't do anything to help exploit the raw talent that the players they do have. They try to do all this extravagant stuff, and the people we have are too young to execute it. You went and signed Toby Gerhardt, and then you run it on stretch plays with him a lot to the outside. Makes no sense to me. He's a big power guy. Why don't they run him up the middle? Like when Todman or Robinson comes in the game, they tend to go in the middle. Am I just like seeing the play?
Well, I don't think we've seen enough of Denard to know where he's going to go, to be honest with you, because he's had 3 carries so far in 2 games. But I understand your point. It hasn't looked good running that stretch play. They believe, and I base this on, you know, talking to Jeff Logman. I know I reference him more than people reference Merriam-Webster, but for goodness sakes, I mean, they know who he was. They watched the film, Tony. They know what offense they want to run. They think he could be successful in this offense, and I think they feel like the blocking has been the bigger problem with this because it's not giving you the opportunity to set up those plays. I agree. It's looked terrible. The stretch play looks awful. And right now, I think that's why you saw the run completely abandoned last week, period. It wasn't just a stretch play. They just ran it 7 times last week
yep.
to tailbacks. Now, they ended up with 10 because Henne had some scrambles in there, but to me, the one knock I've had about the play calling is, if they're crushing you with the pass rush, why aren't you circling a back around them out of the backfield and dumping it over their heads? And they finally did it on the final drive of the game. okay, it's a moot point at that point in time.
Yep.
So when it's going this way, the play calling's always going to look, it's just going to look bad. I don't think they're putting too much on these receivers. These receivers need to step up. This is the National Football League now. Okay, this is your profession. You've been around all summer long, whether you've been taking actual reps or the quote-unquote mental reps that everyone's taking on the sideline. Know where the hell you're supposed to be running. You know, have some personal responsibility in that. I don't think what the Jags are running is overly complicated.
No, I think they're simplifying it more and more on a weekly basis.
Right.
And they've talked about that. They've talked about, look, Gus Bradley came out on Monday this week and said, we got to figure out what we're doing well and what we're not doing well. And if we need to simplify things, we will. And then they came out Wednesday and said, yeah, I mean, it is getting simpler what they're doing on the offensive side of the ball. That what they're trying to do is not complicated. I know everyone keeps complaining about the stretch play. They need the stretch play. For everyone that's going to call and complain about that, they also want to call and say, well, why don't they move the pocket? Because they can't without the stretch play. They need both. They need one for the other.
They want
to
the stretch play running to the right side so they can bootleg left,
right,
and vice versa.
They got the bootleg to work once on Sunday against Washington, and Allen Hurns dropped a touchdown. I mean, when they got the play to work, it was a very effective play. They had three guys open on that play. Henny put the ball where it needed to be for Allen Hurns, and he dropped the ball. But it was the only time in that entire game where the bootleg worked, where Kerrigan smashed down on that play looking for the run.
You know why? Because it was early enough that they didn't realize that they didn't have to do
it
that.
It wasn't completely ineffective yet. And as soon as it showed that it was going to be in that game, it was done. They can't move the pocket anymore. And now every time he takes that snap on 2nd and 10, 3rd and 8, everyone knows where Chad Henne's going to be standing when he hits that back foot. We all know where he's going to be because they can't move the pocket at that point. Stretch play needs to work.
6-4-1-10-10. Darren, you're up next on Jaguars Today. Good morning.
Hey, good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Just a couple of quick comments is I'm excited. I think the Jags will look much better this Sunday in their home opener. Just your thoughts on this. I expected a 3-13 or a 4-12 season with this young offense. I really did. I think Bortles will get in there here in the next couple of games. But the thing that I am disappointed in, and I've heard y'all mention it, is during the preseason, the defense seemed to really swarm the ball, and now they seem like they almost inserted a whole entire new defense the first two games. They're like, guys are out of position, they're blown assignments, and we didn't see that much in the preseason, and I'd like to hear your thoughts on why that is, and I'll hang up with us again.
Well, you don't see it in the preseason because nobody's doing anything tricky in the preseason,
right,
for one thing. Nobody's trying to – it's so basic and so vanilla that what they're doing on both sides of the football, there's very little to get confused about. You know, it's just basic defensive principles. I don't know, Tony. I don't know if it's guys over-pursuing because they feel like, boy, things aren't going well and I've got to do something more. You know, that everyone preaches in football, you can only do your job. I know that's a Gus Bradley quote, but everyone says that. You've got to, you know, stay in your lane. And that's how you do hit big plays. We saw that. You go back to the preseason. That Reggie Bush touchdown run was an over pursuit of a guy trying to fill the wrong hole, trying to make up for his teammate.
Mm-hmm.
Where, you know, I don't know if it's a cascade of those kind of things or lack of discipline or what it is, and certainly I think as the game wore on, I think Ryan O'Halloran had the number yesterday. What do you say? No missed tackles in the first four drives, and then you had 8 like in the next several, and
it was 8 on one drive.
8 on one drive, and like 15 though in the remainder of the game, something like at least 15, and it was almost like you got to a point this weekend. I hate to try to parse the motivation of these players, but it was like, man, did you just get a here we go again kind of mentality out of the football team? I don't know. I can't explain it. But there's no reason for a team on that side of the football, like you've said, and we've talked about, yes, there's some guys. You're going to see Telvin Smith get exploited every once in a while. He's a young, anxious, eager rookie trying to make plays out there. But there are plenty of veterans out there on that defense. Yes, they were without Jonathan Cyprian. It wasn't Josh Evans that was the big culprit in this game. By all counts, he played pretty solid football this game. So I don't know. I don't know. I think that's probably the most disturbing thing about this week is you really can't explain how this defense that is supposed to be the one part that you can hopefully count on with this football team could give up 41 points to a mediocre bunch.
And I think there's a difference when you're talking about mistakes that come from guys going too hard, like effort mistakes. You know, Telvin Smith's going to overrun a play because he's a little too excited.
Sure.
At times, as opposed to, you know, whatever happened on that touchdown to the fullback lining up in the slot, that's a mental bust. That's not a guy that got a little over anxious on a play. That is somebody just forgetting what they're supposed to do, what their assignment is on a play. I think those kind of things at this level of football are completely unacceptable. A rookie overrunning a play because he happens to have a lot of speed and it's always worked for him that way, all right. Those things are going to happen, and you can go show him on tape, this is what you need to be doing on this play, and you hope he learns from that. A guy completely forgetting what he's supposed to do on a play, what do you do with that?
I don't know, because it wasn't just a single isolated instance
right.
of it. It was multiple instances of it from multiple different players, and you hope that that's one that's kind of inexplicable and you burn the tape, kind of, so to speak. You know, the old cliche, like, just move on. There's nothing to be learned from this. And I know the coaching staff is going to try to teach guys the right way, but so many things went wrong. It almost seems if you focus on everything you need to fix in that game, the hole you've dug yourself is so deep you're never going to climb out of it.
Right.
All right, the Tom Bush Family of Dealerships Fan Feedback Spotlight today asks you, keys to victory. We got to get that win. This Sunday, come out and protect the bank. Tickets available, Jaguars.com/tickets or 633-2000. What are your three keys to victory for the Jacksonville Jaguars? At MD_1010XL, at 1010XL Fat Tony, at 1010XL Lauren on Twitter, or go to Jaguars Today on Facebook. Coming up next, Derek Schultz is with WNDE in Indianapolis. He'll join us to talk about the 0-2 Colts coming to town on Sunday. This is Jaguars Today on a Claude Nolan Cadillac Friday on 1010XL, 92.5 FM.
I'm Paul Posluszny, and you're listening to the best Jaguars coverage in Jacksonville on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
All right, Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony, called Nolan Cadillac Friday here. That's Mace, Breathe, Stretch, Shake, Tony, on the heels of Eddie Money. What do we got? I got nothing.
We're mixing it up today, aren't we?
You got anything? You're mixing me up. Baby, hold on.
I do breathe, a good job stretch. Of that every day.
Is this
day.
Something to do with labor pains? A baby?
Oh,
breathe?
Good what? Night. No.
No? All right. I have no idea where the hell you're going with this this morning, Lauren Brooks.
Good. You Keep know what? After a literal week, I'm glad to hear that.
It
I've
was pretty easy week
you.
For you with the music themes.
Yeah, I've been busy, okay?
Let's go up to Indianapolis, say hello to our buddy Derek Schultz, WNDE. Covers the Colts up there, and he joins us here on 1010XL. What's up, Derek? How are you?
Hey, Mike. Great to talk to you.
Is it great? What's going on in Indy right now? Are they shaking their head? I mean, down here, we don't like it, but I think they're a lot more used to going 0-2 to start a season than they are up in Indianapolis.
Yeah, there are two viewpoints here, Mike. One is people understand the history of teams starting 0-2 and what it means for their likelihood of making the playoffs. About 9 out of 10 don't make the playoffs, so that's hard to ignore, that statistic. But the flip side of that, if we're going glass half full, is they lost to a Denver team on the road who won the AFC last year by one score, and then they basically gave away a game Monday night against Philly. They're up 7 with the ball on the Philly 22-yard line with 5 minutes left. 90% of the time you win that game. And those are two teams that both won their divisions last year, both made the playoffs last year, and very likely are going to make the playoffs again this year. So it's not like they lost the first 2 weeks to the Raiders and the Texans or something like that. I think there is some peace of mind knowing that Denver and Philly are two of the toughest teams that they're going to face this year. But there's no question that there are big-time concerns of the way that this team started, and now it makes the margin of error minuscule here, because in order to win the division, you still probably have to at least finish 10-4, and I don't care who you're playing, to win 10 out of 14, that's not easy to do.
All right, Derek, that's how Colts fans feel about themselves up there. How do they feel about this game coming down here to play Jacksonville?
Well, first they look at it as a must-win game because they can't fall into an 0-3 hole. And if you think that people are panicking now, you can imagine what would happen if they would go down to Jacksonville, a team that just lost 41-10 last week to the Redskins, no offense, and end up losing that game. So I think they're viewing this as a bigger game maybe than they viewed it a couple of weeks ago going into the season. But I think most people here look at Jacksonville as a team. I know this 0-2 start probably doesn't reveal it, but that's finally got its head on straight, that is looking like a competent franchise again, because you guys know more than I do, but if I'm giving you the outside perspective, the last couple of years, It's been viewed here as one of the most poorly run franchises in the entire NFL, and it feels like there's actually some continuity there. People like Gus Bradley and think that he's doing an okay job, and they feel like the talent level, albeit very young talent, is going to get to a point where Jacksonville is back to being the Jacksonville that used to give the Colts headaches all the time and was a great competitor in this AFC South. So I do feel like people are starting to become wary of the Jaguars, maybe not in the scope of the 2014 season, but a franchise that is finally heading in the right direction, even if the first two games are not an indication of that.
Derek, how come no pass rush? I realize Robert Mathis was suspended, now out for the year with the torn Achilles, but one sack through two games is a shockingly low total right now for Indy.
Mike, you just answer your own question. How come no pass rush? The answer is because no Robert Mathis. He was the Colts pass rush last year, 19.5 sacks, and they just can't generate anything without him. And that's been their MO for so long. I mean, if you go back and look at these teams over the last, let's say, 10, 12 years, really the golden era of Colts football, even going back to the Peyton Manning days, they had Freeney and they had Mathis, and those were their guys. That's how they got to the quarterback. And then Freeney left, and then it was Mathis's show. They've really not ever established another legitimate pass rusher along with those guys. I went back and actually looked in the last 15 years at their sack leaders, and it's Freeney and Mathis way, way, way up here at the top, and then there's a huge gap. And I think it was Raheem Brock was in third place for most sacks out of anybody else. So I don't know if you even guys remember the name Raheem Brock, but that just shows how big of a gap it's been between their elite-level pass rusher guys and the rest of the guys that they've had to try to employ to get after the quarterback. So it's a big-time concern. I'd still say that offensive line is probably their number one concern, but lack of a pass rush is right there. It's probably the 1B to the offensive line's 1A.
Derek Schultz joining us on the Garber Auto Mall Hotline here to talk a little Indianapolis Colts football. You mentioned the offensive line there. I know it's kind of been a work in progress for this Colts team for the last two or three years. Where do they feel like they are trying to protect Andrew Luck, one of the best young quarterbacks in the game?
I think they felt better, actually, with the way that the first two games have gone than they did in the preseason. They did not have a good preseason, but then again, they've been really banged up. Khalid Holmes, who likely is going to return this week, albeit not as the starting center anymore, entered the season and played through camp as the number one center and then had a high ankle sprain on the second series of the first preseason game and hasn't seen any action since. They brought in A.Q. Shipley the last week of the preseason, and he's been your starter for the last 2 weeks. And then on the interior of the line, they lose Donald Thomas for the second straight year for the season. He was a big-time free agent acquisition of theirs two summers ago and just has not been able to be healthy. He was projected to be their starter at left guard. He goes down, so they move Hugh Thornton from right guard over to left guard, and now they're starting Jack Muhort, a second-round pick out of Ohio State, at right guard, who's still a little bit fresh, if you will, not a very seasoned player, being a rookie. And so the interior of the offensive line has been, to put it lightly, a work in progress. They like what they have at tackle. Anthony Costanzo has been a starter since day one, since he was a first-round pick in 2011, and he has been a good player. He might not ever be a Pro Bowl-caliber player, but he's at least a solid guy that you can rely on. And Goster Chehrolis is a veteran on the other side, so they feel good about their two beckons, but the two interior, or the three interior linemen has been the area of concern. But I will say, guys, that they have performed better than expected through these first two games, and I think you could see that in what they did in the Philadelphia game with their ability to both run block and protect Andrew Luck.
Hey, Derek, if they hadn't given up a first-round pick to get him, would Trent Richardson still be the starter in Indy?
No. This is one of those pedigree moves. I like to look at it as it's kind of like the boss's son who's made COO of the company, and everybody's saying to herself, this guy is a complete moron. Why is he the COO of this company? He shares the same last name as the owner. That's why it's like nepotism, but the difference is that Ryan Grigson's trying to protect his ego for a failed trade. The one-year anniversary, by the way, coincidentally enough, was yesterday of that deal to Trent Richardson. I think most people believe that Ahmad Bradshaw is the better running back. Richardson, it's so funny, guys, because it's one of those things where he has this great game yardage-wise, career high in yards, 79, only 3.8 yards per carry. That just shows how low the bar has been lowered for him. And he fumbles twice, including one critical late-game fumble, which really allowed the Eagles to come back, rally, and tie the score. So even when Richardson is good, he does something bad. There's just no getting out of his own way. I'm still going to give him these next couple of games to see if there's anything there, but everybody has pretty much given up on him ever being what they thought he was going to be coming out of Alabama and what the scouting report said about him 2 years ago.
Reggie Wayne has looked pretty good in his first 2 weeks back since coming off the ACL injury. How close to 100% do you get the sense he is, and is he still improving on a week-to-week basis?
We do a weekly radio show with him on Tuesdays where he spends a full hour with us, and he's told us that he feels like his knee is stronger than it's ever been. You know, this is a guy that's going to be, I believe, 35 years old in about 8 weeks, so he is getting much older, and he's about as healthy, I think, as a 35-year-old coming off major knee surgery can be. But he says he feels fine. He had kind of a quiet day, had three catches, something like that, against Philadelphia, but it wasn't really one of those games where they tried to air it out. They threw for under 200 yards and mostly kept to the ground, but was great in Denver, nine catches, 98 yards. And I think he's just one of those guys that he's going to be Reggie Wayne. Is he an all-pro anymore? No. Is he a Pro Bowler anymore? Probably not. But I think he's a guy that's going to go for something like 70, 75 catches, something like 800-900 yards, and be a reliable security blanket for Andrew Luck. And I think at this juncture of his career, final year of his contract, by the way, that's all you can expect from somebody like that.
Yeah, by the way, I don't know if it will take 10 to win this division. I honestly, I think 9-7 might be the winning total. Yeah, in the AFC. So I don't think Houston's not as good as a 2-0 record might indicate. I think their defense is pretty good, but and I think Tennessee can be had in any given week. Certainly Jacksonville doesn't look like they're hitting double digits. I'm not saying the Colts won't make it there. I'm just saying they might not need to make it there. I think 9-7 has a definite chance to win the AFC South this year. What's your prediction for Sunday, Derek?
I think the Colts go down there and win. I was having this conversation with somebody yesterday, and it's said that, well, you know, Jacksonville's given no indication that they're going to beat the Colts this weekend. And I said to him, well, the Colts have given no indication really that they're going to beat Jacksonville this weekend. So it's a very interesting matchup along those lines. But especially considering the Jags' injuries, I mean, fully healthy at home and given their history against the Colts, I would give them a real legitimate shot to win the game, and I still give them a puncher's chance because it's just one of those games where the Colts and Jags, it's always close. I know last year's game in Jacksonville wasn't. But I think they go down there and win. I can't imagine that they would fall to 0-3 and lose to a Jacksonville team who's been outscored 75-10 in the last six quarters and has given up, 13 sacks this season and just has so many injuries across the board, especially to their offensive side of things. So I think the Colts go down there and win and finally notch a W in that column.
All right, Derek Schultz is with WNDE in Indianapolis, appearing on the Garber Auto Mall Hotline. Derek, enjoy the weekend. We'll talk to you soon, all right?
You too. Sounds good.
Thank you, buddy. There he goes, Derek Schultz, covering the Colts. It's funny because both sides feel the same. The Colts are like, you know what, they gave up 13 sacks. We haven't had any yet. We've had one. Well, the Jags got to be thinking, well, they don't sack anybody. Maybe this is the week we actually are able to keep our quarterback clean a little bit longer in the pocket and give him some chance to make some throws down the field.
Maybe.
That's what you got to be thinking, though. I'm not saying I would bet more on the former than the latter because we've seen that offensive line in action up close for the first couple of weeks. But it is what I think you look at this depending on how you want to look at it from both sides. You could say, you know what? Jags were tied with Philly in the fourth quarter. They were ahead of Philly. I mean, it's very similar. Well, it's really not that similar if you watch how the game played out throughout most of it. But look, they got to play them. They got to come down here on Sunday. And the Jags did start 0-8 last year with seemingly no hope in sight and ripped off four victories in 5 weeks. Let's hope they start a streak like that coming up this weekend. 6-4-1-10-10 if you want to get in this date in football history. Coming up, the Honda drive around the NFL, and we'll handicap a few NFL games for you as well with Lee Sterling for Paramount Sports. All that coming up on a Caught Nolan Cadillac Friday on Jaguars Today on 1010XL 92.5 FM.